Time for another check-in with the State Representative Techie Chan of Quincy for a Techie Talk. How are you doing, Techie?
Doing good, Joe. Happy Wednesday, I believe. It's been a week, and it's a cloudy day today.
Well, what a surprise. Clouds and rain. It's we're having a Seattle summer so far.
Oh, it actually is. Last year, it was drought conditions all year.
That's right.
We're filling the reservoirs, although the Cape and the islands still could use a little more rain, I understand. But it's you know, people's well water should be better this year, as well as the Quab and other reservoir areas this year. So you won't need to get as much water alerts, which is funny because everyone was home last year despite there was a water shortage.
That's right. Yeah, I think we're going to have a bumper crop of mosquitoes this year for sure.
I've had a few nips, so to speak, of mosquitoes. I've been stung a few times already. And you know, obviously there's been a big pollen season. There's acorns everywhere around my house. I mean, this is a bumper, a crop year for tree pollen and nuts, where I live anyway. And chipmunks and squirrels are having a field day.
Oh yeah, so I'm waiting for the harvest, tomatoes and squash. I think there's gonna be quite a few of them this year.
Well, squirrels are adept at getting your tomatoes. I learned that as a child from my father.
Yeah, they'll stop at nothing, that's for sure. How's your world and the world? Actually, since last we talked, it's been announced that the State House, I guess, won't fully reopen even by October.
Yeah, you know, last week we did our joint rules debate. I'm sorry, House rules debate. Joint rules is still in conference committee. And the House is going to keep temporary rules open to October 1st. Senate President and Speaker has both announced that they have already formed a joint committee to discuss the building's reopening and how we're going to do it. As I remind folks again, I live in a box. Imagine being inside your closet, no windows. That is the State House. It has very high ceilings. So obviously the concern continues to be the fact that we are not checking people's vaccinations coming into the building. We do require currently contact tracing. Anybody comes to the State House, we have to keep a log and be able to find you in case something does happen. And the question is, you know, how we're going to perhaps keep a log, keep a log. Do we not check the people's health situations? What do we do with staff health situations? And then those who visit my office knows that, you know, staff are sitting about 2 feet apart. There really is no more space to move desks, as well as my own office, which does have windows. Mind you, it's actually below ground level windows. I mean, it's kind of a painting wall situation. I stare at a wall. You know, it's a good size office, but, you know, again, just, you know, the air doesn't move. We have one, we use a hot, cold water heating system, whatever that fluid is in the pipes, and just a fan that blows off the pipes. So we don't actually have an HAV where circulating air.
Yeah,
this is the whole State House. And if you're a freshman rep, you're going to get a cube. Basically, it's basically like a 7x7 box of plywood with surrounding you with a light overhead with your aide sitting 2 feet behind you.
Okay. All right. So it's too close quarters for sure.
Yeah. I mean, you know, even though people getting vaccinated, we still know that, you know, 30% or so of the population that's eligible for vaccine are not vaccinated. In Quincy, we're sitting around 62-64% vaccination. We're not quite at 70% in Quincy. There is no vaccine approved for children, but my gut tells me we're going to see something after Labor Day. Children can be carriers, even though they do have a very low, but not none. They do have a low, but not none mortality rate and severe illness rate. But they can also be carriers. So with the Delta variant, you know, running rapid right now through the entire world, this thing has moved super fast and coming out of India. You know, if you're not vaccinated, your odds have now just gone dramatically that you could be infected by COVID-19.
And, yeah.
You know, so there's a lot of questions in our world regarding how do we deal with an inherently sick building. I've been working there a very long time. And those folks who've seen me in the district, particularly again during the months of November to April, if I'm not on vacation in December or someplace warm, I'm always sick. I've noticed when I go away for a while, the stress levels go down, and actually lower stress actually helps your health. There is no going away. There's always no going away last year, probably not going away this year where things are looking. You know, it's not just you know, I always joke that's part of being out in district meeting people. I pick up someone's cold or the flu, but the State House is just also one giant incubator. In mm-hmm. my 20 plus years of working in the building, I mean, you know, as I've aged, my immune system ain't so great. I do age, just saying.
Even though you don't look at Zachy. No, but obviously it is a concern. Now we're hearing about even these breakthrough cases of vaccinated people out on the Cape. I know that's been a few cases, and I'm sure there are others too.
Yeah, there's a couple of key points about this. Right now, the research shows, and again, in another week, I could be wrong because I only know what I know today. This has been the challenge of COVID-19. Every time I learn something in 7 days, it may be different. But the key parts of the U.S. vaccines, you know, the Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson, but especially Pfizer, Moderna, so far, if you're infected COVID-19, you're not transmissible. And that's the key. The vaccines keep you from reaching a viral load. When you exhale, more virus comes out. The goal is to try to contain and kill the virus inside your body, give your body a chance to you know, kill it, because the vaccine identifies it, teaches your body how to get it and go kill it before it multiplies enough to leave your body. And that's how you get these mutations. So the more people are infected increases the odds of these variant COVID-19 cases. Right now, the key number zero, zero deaths of using any of the U.S. made vaccines. Mm-hmm. Has not been tested on, you know, close to 100 million people, right?
Right. Yeah.
At least in the U.S., 100 million plus people. So, you know, the getting infected and ill has been very small. To my knowledge, has been only a handful of hospitalizations. It has been severe enough that you have to be hospitalized. I think in J&J's case, I think there's still zero hospitalizations related to COVID-19. I do understand there's been other side effects. Mm-hmm. But again, you're weighing against, you know, hundreds of millions of doses given out.
Right.
The small number of people with side effects. So it's basically going to be, it's actually less dangerous than Tylenol, I think, at this stage. I think there's other drugs that you probably have a higher percentage of possible adverse effects. But then again, I mean, I could be wrong next week because, again, the science is constantly coming out.
Right.
But I mean, I was talking and watching the news again, and, you know, the Sinovac vaccine out of China does not use mRNA technology. It uses the old flu vaccine technology. And there has been hundreds to some countries, thousands of COVID infections despite being fully vaccinated. And there's been confirmed at least one death, potentially two or more, as you know, they continue the autopsies and data collection of people who died from taking the Chinese vaccines. Mm. So right now, I mean, the UK vaccine of AstraZeneca right now, as well as Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson, have zero deaths.
Mm-hmm.
That's been linked to it. And people are like, well, you missed some. Well, yeah, there's always a case, you know, the medical facilities and scientists from across the globe miss a case or two. But the reality is that the monitoring level of COVID-19 infections is something every country takes extremely seriously.
Yeah. Do you think that here in Massachusetts, we're in a better position just because of the higher vaccination rate in general?
No, absolutely. I mean, the more vaccinated people reduces the possibility of spread. And like I said, you know, the U.S. vaccines have shown thus far that if you are infected, the cases are very mild, and then you're also not infectious. You're not giving it to anybody else. And the key is to stop it somewhere.
Right.
And if a virus has no place to live and no place to multiply, then it's over. It just has nowhere to go. So, again, I encourage everyone to get vaccinated. If not been vaccinated, you know, we're at over 70% of people who are eligible for vaccine, which is everyone over age 12, is vaccinated, fully vaccinated, but we still need to get the number higher. And this is a key part of our economy. You need people to work. You need people, your customers that are healthy to keep the world going around us. And those of you who want to travel, at least inside the U.S., minimum, you know, if you're vaccinated, your odds are still good that you won't get sick. And thus far, the mRNA vaccines seem to be very effective still against the variants, especially the new Delta variant. The change technology. Canada is hoping to open up their borders sometime this fall. Because my sister-in-law is actually from Canada, hasn't seen her parents in a couple of years, just, you know, very much like everybody else that's watching, have not seen family in a while. They're eager to get back up there. But again, they're fully vaccinated here, but then they're not hit critical mass herd immunity potential in Canada. So, I mean, things, the COVID numbers are better, but again, the Delta variant has caused spikes in 47 states in the U.S. already. The southern states that are not have high vaccination rates are now taking overrun hospitals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're seeing that Arkansas, Mississippi, some other places. I think Nevada is having issues as well. So it's, I guess that's proof that the vaccines, are effective.
Well, the Massachusetts numbers show that. Once we head closer and closer to 60, 70% vaccination rates, the number of COVID cases dramatically dropped. And it was a cliff. It just came straight down. Mm-hmm. And hospitalizations came down as well as deaths. Now, it's spiking up again. I think everyone's been watching numbers. It's going in the other direction. And I'm going to tell you, it's probably largely contributed to Delta variant. And I still believe what's going to happen is that you're going to have treat this like the measles in the long term. We have a cluster of unvaccinated folks, hence the issue of opening the state house, living in a box.
Yeah.
You got these unvaccinated folks in a cluster, and the virus is going to go crazy in that one zone. And it's going to have to be public health, local public health officials, to try to get containment and contact tracing as quickly as possible. Because if you're in a community like in Quincy, we have 40%, 30, 40% still unvaccinated. But if you happen to be, all in one neighborhood unvaccinated, for example, and one person gets a Delta variant, you could find itself bouncing around in that one neighborhood very quickly.
Right.
So, this is kind of the, constant conversation about vaccination.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, there's that inherent danger inside a small area of unvaccinated folks.
Yeah. We talk a little bit about a report that the governor cited this week, Jackie, about the return to work in Massachusetts and some of the challenges and changes that he's anticipating and hoping to fund with money from the American Rescue Plan.
Well, you mean the life we've been living for the last year and a half that we don't know already?
It's like we're a living experiment right now. Yeah, exactly.
I think pretty much everybody watching this, kind of like you need a report to tell us something we all kind of been living. Like a book report in some ways.
Right. Hey, yeah.
This is my summer. This is my summer, right? We've talked about this quite a few times, and I think there's a general agreement that a certain segment of the white, especially the white collar working world, is going to be operating some hybrid model for the most part. I've heard some families, this works well for them and it doesn't work well for others, right? It's a very case by case basis. And, it has a really big impact on transportation and the economy of dense population areas, especially the city of Boston, which increases by 1 million people during working hours for a city of almost 700,000. So its infrastructure is designed to take in other 1 million folks. So you had asked me last time what the deal with the MBTA is, and I honestly haven't looked at numbers, but I did a drive-by by Wall Station midday last week. I had to do some errands and a couple of appointments outside of my home. It's actually kind of fun taking appointments outside my home. But people aren't willing to go to Boston, so I'm now meeting people locally.
Okay.
In a coffee shop, place of business, whatever works, right? And Wilson parking lot was barely half full.
Wow. That speaks volumes, because normally you can't get near that place.
Yeah, those who take Wilson T Station knows that lot is full before 7:30 in the morning.
Yep.
And this was midweek. But we are seeing higher traffic patterns because the roadways have increased traffic coming out of Boston. I still believe that part of that is driven by the fact that people are afraid to get on public transit.
I think you're right, yeah.
I don't think it's the inconvenience of the mask. I think it's just concern about what's going on in the tube. Even though the air is blowing, it's still in a small tube with people around you. So I think it's a legitimate concern. So when the governor talks about things we all know about, I mean, the adverse effect is described on public transportation, the impact of traffic generally, the workplace environment changes. And, I've always been advocating the fact that employers should compensate employees for using their own stuff at home. You're using your own water, your own electricity, your own equipment in many cases. And, employees should compensate people for that. You were expected to work at a workplace, not expected to work at home. And the impact on your pocketbook associated with that. And again, I filed a bill to allow you to take those home expenses, a deduction on your taxes, because under the Trump tax cut law, he took away people with W-2's ability to take tax deductions for business.
Mm.
So for those of you who thought that the Trump tax was great, well, I mean, they stuck it to working class folks in W-2s.
And charitable deductions too. That impacted nonprofits, yeah.
Absolutely, particularly, you know, in the time when, you know, some of us have a couple bucks, you know, want to be helpful.
Yep.
You can't get a deduction for that as well.
Right.
So, you know, there's all these other factors involved. And then, you know, I don't think they accounted for the infrastructure costs. As I said, we're using water and electricity. Well, your residential areas aren't designed for all your homes to be running 24/7 nonstop. Your infrastructure is designed largely for residential use, meaning that most people would not be home during the day hours,
right,
but have reduced usage, and it has high usage at night. So the electrical system, your power systems of the National Grid, NSTARS, you know, have a ability to track how much power is being used. ISO England tracks the power in the region and where it's being consumed. And obviously Boston's not consuming the same amount of electricity, water, sewage than you are at home in your communities. But Quincy's an overbuilt city. I mean, no one's going to deny that.
Mm-hmm.
But we have an infrastructure that's like over 100 years old, designed for a city that was much smaller. And everything from rainwater collection down to sewer water and electricity reflects that. And, you know, we talked about this before. We've experienced this more than once during a Zoom call with you where the internet went down.
Mm-hmm.
Of bandwidth issues during remote learning. So I do believe that, you know, obviously school's back in play at this fall. Kids will be home as often to use bandwidth. But, you know, there still would be a lot of infrastructure impact if a third or more of the workforce doesn't go back into the office in Boston, or even if half the workforce or more operates in a hybrid model.
Yeah. One thing I took away I thought was very interesting was the increased need for workforce training, you know, for a lot of folks who have lost their jobs and those jobs are gone. They're not coming back. So what do we do with these folks? You know, to find them new jobs.
Well, our running joke is how to use the damn mute button.
You know,
we have a mute people. Use the mute button is kind of the running joke all the time, but it's also not a running joke. I've been muted and unmuted incorrectly myself,
right,
over the course of time. And this is a legitimate, I know it sounds odd, but it's a legitimate workforce training question, right?
Yeah.
And you're right, certain jobs will probably have permanent workforce reduction regarding COVID, and some businesses never open up again. I mean,
right.
Grumpy White's is gone, for example.
Yep.
As one restaurant locally that just couldn't get through COVID. Various hands-on businesses such as salons and massage parlors are not fully hiring because, again, I mean, changing workforce.
Yeah.
And if you go to KMN Marketplace, they have some of those storefronts in the middle of the market, in that little kind of U-shaped thing. There's some businesses, you know, last visit there, permanently closed, including Lollicop. Bo-T is mm-hmm. gone for.
Yeah, and even bigger retailers are, like Target and Walmart are having trouble, you know, getting people to come.
But yeah, it was not just getting people to come, but I mean, some were going out of business. I mean, you know, Lord and Taylor had a fire sale, right?
Yes, yeah.
I mean, so part of it is, people saying that you have to hire unemployment benefits. I agree with that. You know, part of it is people realize they're dead at jobs. I agree with that. I think part of it is people reaching a certain age where they decide that, you know, this is what are you really doing with your life? And someone mm-hmm. just retire. I agree with that too.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very unfair to just blame the unemployment benefits as the cause of workforce shortage. If you're in a continuous exposure to people every single day with no knowledge about whether or not they can make you ill with a disease that, you know, is now closing in on mumps level of infectious rate, slowly but steady getting to mumps with the Delta virus. You got to rethink about how important is your life. And then you got to think, you know, we're in the middle of a job that, frankly, we all know has nowhere else to go. And wouldn't you like to think about what your next steps in life is? I think COVID has given a lot of people that wake up call. And I know people mm-hmm. that retire younger than they expected because they don't want to, you know, they don't know how long you're going to be around. The mortality thing is quite real.
No, I think all that is true. I agree. It's a combination of all of that, and more too, that we're not even aware of yet, I think.
Yeah. And the workforce training is, you know, we made fun of the mute button, but I mean, it's really a technology change issue,
mm-hmm.
how we use our technology. And, you know, and I mean, you know, we're going to have more delivery services. I don't consider that a workforce training issue. It's a workforce shortage issue, right? Delivering stuff. Let's be honest. What's your career path, right? You know, what does that take you? And I mean, one of the things that employers have now had to deal with, they haven't dealt with since pre-08 recession, or really the pre-03 recession, is a buyer's market for employees.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a very long time since employers had to deal with employee leverage regarding salaries and benefits. And, it, you know, people get comfortable in a certain way of doing business, even though it's not always been the case. We know for a fact that employees have leveraged before in salary. It's not new, but it's been so long employers act like it's something brand new.
Right.
Because they've gotten so used to the way things operate. And, you know, that's a huge workforce adjustment also for employers as well about, you know, what does it take to make an investment in an employee, or you're looking just for rotational employees that frankly and have all discovered that why am I doing this? There's nowhere to go.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we continue to have challenges in hiring and healthcare. I mean, I think it's COVID, you know, has a huge psychological and physical impact on healthcare workers. I think there's going to be a need for more workforce training on that stuff. I mean, obviously, everyone keeps talking about, you know, high tech, you know, obviously, but biotech also needs more technicians as, you know, they continue to ramp up, you know, their research, not just in COVID-19, but so many other diseases. And
yeah, the mRNA technology has just a vast, you know, future, I think, in many different diseases.
Yeah, there's work in biotech. If people are looking to get a technician's degree, you know, a 2-year associate at Quincy College or other, you know, institution, I know Framingham State's another one that has biotech, a technician degree. I mean, I think it's a good time for people to look at, you know, the future of our economy here and doing that. And, you know, certain things in hospitality may never return. You know, I've talked about travel agencies before, but travel agencies are not massively rehiring their people.
No.
There's nowhere to go. And there's a segment of workforce that needs to rethink about this. I mean, ticket resellers. I mean, the ticket reseller in Quincy's gone, right? So there's another group of folks that need to really rethink where they're going to go. I mean, you know, they expect them to go to a low wage job or low hourly job, or do you want? Or they're going to rethink where their career is going. So I think while the economy is recovering, people have this like misconception that everything's going back to normal. I hate to tell everyone this, but there is no normal go back to. It's a new normal we're still trying to work out. And the governor's report is, well, we all live the governor's report. But I mean, it's kind of just trying to reflect the fact that don't expect things to go back to pre-pandemic.
Yeah. Like, another takeaway was I think you mentioned something like the need for 200,000 new housing units by the year 2030 or something. And that astounded me, really. Who's coming and what are they going to do?
Well, I mean, we've been feeling the housing crunch for a long time. We've been talking about affordable housing for what it feels like a lifetime to me.
Yes, yeah.
It's not a new conversation. What you got a housing shortage right now outside of Boston because people are fleeing dense urban in favor of a yard. I mean, those of us in Quincy that are in single family homes don't have the benefit of social distancing by having a yard.
Right.
And at least enjoy some outdoor space, even though we really can't go anywhere and get some air and sun, versus living in a multi-unit area where one person gets COVID, the whole place potentially could also be infected, which has happened in New York is the example, sadly, during wave one. I mean, the multi-story buildings were just one giant infection zone. Sad, but you know that's what happened. You know, the housing shortage is not a new issue. It's just funny they brought it up. It's really about the question of what affordable housing is going to look like. And residential housing prices, because of high demand and low supply, has gone through the roof. So when you guys look at your taxes coming up, unfortunately, on your property taxes, you're going to see a massive assessment of how high your value your property is because of homes sold around you of similar design. It will show reflected in your property tax valuation that's going to impact your taxes. As the valuation goes up, so does your taxes. So the real question is, what do you do if people who aren't selling the Boston properties, who can afford to buy a home outside of Boston. And, you know, how do you still make it affordable where so-called smart growth has created more expensive housing closer to public transit? And I'm aware the governor has been looking at building more affordable housing near public transit. But I mean, you know, not to criticize a project, but you got a North Quincy project now that isn't designed for working affordable housing, you know, first job folks near a train station. You don't want to have a, you don't want them to own a car. And that's kind of the, I blame this one on Deval Patrick. I mean, you know, all he did was create something that was considered undesirable, more desirable to be near public transportation. People didn't like near public transit because of the noise. And anybody who lives close to train tracks, I dealt with noise train issues for a while. It's you know, people tend to want to not do that. But now it's the opposite. Your property value goes up despite that. So, you know, 200,000 units of housing, you know, I think we all know that's not new. I think moving forward, again, it's a new normal, right? You know, people working more white-collar jobs. People don't want to raise their family in a dense urban area, in a multi-story building. You know, what's going to happen there? You know, we're past Tokyo, I think, in terms of cost of living. I think we're on par, if not exceeded San Francisco in housing prices relative to per capita. You know, that's ridiculous. So I'm not thinking new people moving in. I think it's more people moving around.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Yeah.
Get out of your parents' house, I think is the way to put it.
What's that?
Get out of your parents' house.
Okay. All right. So young urban professionals, it's the yuppies are coming back.
Yeah. Well, as people know, I'm still in the parent, it's still my mom's house. So we're kind of the living example of that one. But I mean, I think everyone knows families, that family members and friends whose kids are coming from school and they're trying to figure out, you know, can they live on their own?
Oh, yes. You know, it's in my own family, absolutely, for nieces and nephews, and I'm sure many other people too. Are struggling with that same issue for sure. Any more discussion about the 2-month sales tax holiday, Techie?
That news died fast.
Yeah.
After the little blurb, there's been no conversation in my world about it, other than hearing from a handful of constituents about their opposition and support for the matter. It's become irrelevant very quickly in terms of conversation. You know, we passed the budget last week, with new projections significantly higher than our original projections, which actually allowed us not to use rainy day money. It allowed us not to use one-time transfers, allow us to actually balance the budget without actually eating any reserves.
That's nice. That's good.
Yeah. So that's good. I mean, it's a nice problem to have, much to my shock. If most people heard me over the course of last summer, I was preparing for apocalyptic level of budget problems.
Right, yeah.
And now we have the opposite, largely driven by capital gains. So, you know, the goal, you know, is to get to a $5+ billion rainy day fund, which would be about 10% of our budget, or about more than 15 or 16% of our tax collection more accurately, because it's just, the budget has about 1/3 federal reimbursements. Not all state tax and fees and penalties that are funding the budget. So there's, you know, there's a huge federal component. And we still have that large amount of money for the COVID-19 state assistance that we have to have a plan in place to spend over the course of the 3 years or 2 years, depending which program that the feds tell us we have to put money into. So, you know, the sales tax holiday is going to be for 2 days in August, I believe the 13th or 14th, I think, is that middle, is that Friday or Saturday, is like the second or third one?
I think it's the 14th and 15th. 14th. Yeah.
So it's that that weekend. Saturday and Sunday weekend.
Right.
It's weekend now for some reason. But no, Saturday and Sunday. So that's coming up. But I mean, I've not heard a massive outcry that, you know, we need a whole 2 months, 61 days worth.
Yeah, no, I haven't heard that either. And you're right. It just kind of, it got great headlines and then fizzled. So it looks like it's a DOA.
Yeah, that'd be a fair assessment, given the fact we're already in mid-August. I mean, mid-July. I wish it was August. We're already mid-July now. Amazingly quick how July is now moving. There's just nothing there.
Right, right. What is coming up in your committee, folks should know about?
Well, we're going to have a public hearing this coming Monday. You can watch it on Facebook Live on the State Representative Tacky Chan page. You can watch my past ones as well if you really want to see me more. I don't know how to put it. We're going to talk a bit about car industry on Monday. So we have some car franchise bills. We have some bills regarding used cars and consumer protection on those fronts. So we do have a few bills out there to address those issues and get mostly heat testimony from consumer advocates as well as people in the car selling industries. We are not going to address the right to repair. That's sitting in court. I know the voters passed in the law in November. It's in the First Circuit Federal Court, so it's in U.S. District Court right now. There is non-enforcement by the AG's office as the court case unfolds. And the committee will be sitting on those bills, not hearing them yet until we see what the decision of the First Circuit is. We may see a decision sometime after Labor Day. I don't know. The court is going to issue. And the legislature generally responds to what the courts do. Mm-hmm. So if the courts set up a specific set of guidelines because they violate constitutionality, we have to work our way around those guidelines to ensure we don't violate the Constitution. If the court rules against the right to repair folks under a federal component, there's not likely I can find a way around it, but then again, I have to read the case. If the right to repair folks win, the law goes through as is, but the court has ability to change stipulations based on constitutionality. Okay. So it may be a partial change, and the legislature has to fill in the gap if that's the case. So those who don't know, this car right to repair that the voters approved gives you and anybody you tell them to access to the telemetric data in your car. It doesn't limit access, meaning that while it's going after repair data, it doesn't prohibit the ability for anyone else to go to anywhere else in the car. It says you can look at it, but it doesn't say you can't look at everything else. So, everything for your radio stations to GPS coordinates could be given away, as well as your telephone list that it's imported in your car. Mm. For example, it doesn't say it has to be a car mechanic.
Okay.
Measure data to anybody. So, it doesn't also prohibit them from collecting and keeping it.
Okay.
So,
Selling it, right?
And selling your car, your repair shop could keep a copy of GPS data and sell it to a marketing company.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or there's also no prohibition of them tampering or inserting new data. So, if somebody wants to, like Dunkin' Donuts, we just pick any company and say Dunkin' Donuts wants to input into a display every Dunkin' Donuts where you like not an ad show up. You don't have any say in the matter, guys. Just letting you know that's what you voted for.
Not me. My car's 13 years old, so good luck getting anything out of that.
Actually, if your car is 13 years old, there's a good chance it still has its Wi-Fi set up. You actually probably have a low-grade 3G in your car transmitting data still.
Okay.
Yeah, and you also have a telemetric system. So, I had a car that was 13 years old. It was digital. So it actually had a telemetric system. So you actually hooked it up to a computer to see what's going on. So it actually is data in your car. You just don't hook up your phone. So that means you don't have contact imports and GPS.
Right, yeah.
There's other types of data in there as well, including probably your driving habits and how your car starts and stops and what time of day you turn it on.
Oh, interesting, okay.
Yep. Yeah, these things collect a lot of information that, believe it or not, is used to actually make your car safer because you get your recall notices much sooner because the cars transmit, my God, something's going on. You need to fix this part. And then manufacturers very rapidly respond to find a problem, correct a problem, and send a recall notice on anything from a cap malfunction to something more serious like the airbags that we've seen other recall on.
Interesting.
They're trying to get ahead of anybody getting killed from a manufacturing error. And that's what the telemetric data does. So the car industry is very intrusive. I'm not going to lie to you people. They're very intrusive in your car. On the flip side, you hear very little number of actual car manufacturing accidents. They try to get ahead of any potential malfunctions. And of course, they pay for those costs associated with those recalls. So we'll always see what the court does. And we'll take it from there. I've been looking at this issue for well into a decade.
Mm-hmm.
It's much more complicated than people realize what's going on here. Because I would not personally, I would not like anybody to access the rest of the information my car, give them the keys to open the rest of the information my car. You know, right now it's just a read device only for the repair data.
Yeah, that's, you know, I want them to know if there's something mechanically wrong with the car, certainly.
Yeah, the current diagnostic systems only look at the code spit out by the car, you know, saying that, hey, I got a problem. Here's my code number. Look up the number in the book for the database system, but it can't send messages back the other way.
Yeah. And I mean, they already, independent repair shops already had that capability, right? Before this law.
Yeah. State law requires that any equipment, training, and data access given to a car dealership must also be provided for a third party manufacturer to ask and willing to pay for the same information.
Yeah.
The current law also allows the technology upgraded, so you move to a Wi-Fi or Bluetooth based data transmission for repair codes. The independent repair shop has also a right to have the same equipment to read it as well. So they move away from wires, for example, which is going to happen.
Yeah.
And let's go to a Bluetooth based information transmission, and you as a repair shop have the right compatible Bluetooth device and, you know, can, you know, indicate that this is where you can send information to when you turn it on, that the the current law allows to ensure that technology is available to you.
Yeah. The shop would have to pay to invest in that equipment though, right?
Oh, absolutely. The painting and pay and training will be required by, will be needed. I mean, you can't, they're not getting it for free.
Right. Okay.
And as car technology changes, you know, this training is going to be much more crucial going mm-hmm. forward. Anybody who knows a repair shop, you know, fully understands as cars continue to be electrified, be electric cars, there's less parts that any of us recognize anyone under the hood.
Boy, that's true. Yeah.
You know, there's going to be continuously training required. And, you know, we do require in law that manufacturers, you know, have to give this training. It's equal opportunity training.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Alrighty, lots going on. So stay tuned.
Stay tuned. I mean, they got public hearings scheduled for every Monday to August 2nd. We're going to pick up public hearings starting August 30th. So there's about a 3-week break in the middle. And it gives us a chance to breathe a little bit for a few weeks in August to reevaluate the committee research and start moving more bills out in the executive committee for the speaker and ways and means and leadership team to look at as we're trying to get things to the floor. And, you know, stay tuned. I mean, you know, there's going to be another supplemental budget of some form to address the FY21 surplus, which we have to spend in FY21 bills, which include hopefully, I think we will refill the rainy day fund for money that paid for the FY21 budget. You know, we don't close our books until October. So
yeah,
there's a lot going on there. The governor should be sending back his vetoes and amendments sometime next Monday or Tuesday, depending on exactly what time the budget made to his desk last Friday.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, there'll be activity in the second half of the month on overrides and addressing governor's amendments. The film tax credit made it. Many guys know I've been working on this for a decade now. And, you know, thank you to Speaker and, you know, all my colleagues that, you know, gave us 160-0 vote on the version of the House. The only thing it changes, other than making it permanent, it requires production companies to spend 75% of their money in Massachusetts. And I've talked to some folks in the industry, that's not a problem.
They probably spend more than that already anyway, yeah.
That's actually correct. Right now, the law requires 50% or greater, but they actually do spend well over 50% in Massachusetts. Yeah. And this is also great news for small independent filmmakers mm-hmm. because tax credit applies to any filmmaker that's doing a film that's over $50,000 budget.
Mm, okay.
So this is a, you know, great opportunity as part of an economic recovery. It's great. It's in the budget. We'll see what the governor does.
Anything in the supplemental budget for your district?
We don't have a supplemental budget per se in terms of like extra money. Right now, the supplemental budget that we passed was bill paying and transfer money between accounts.
Oh, okay.
So there wasn't any kind of like earmarking opportunity or project specific Quincy. It was more of a bookkeeping. So not our so-called supplemental budgets. I still refer to more fashionably as deficiency budgets because it's just paying, doesn't move money around because that's what it really is. It's it's not extra money.
Gotcha.
Plus supplies. So the last one we did really was a bunch of transfers. One of the quirky parts of that supplemental includes the mail-in ballot issue, which the House and Senate still has not reached a consensus on whether making it permanent or an extension through this year. And I do know there's a lot of concerns from cities and town clerks right now about getting that into place, especially with Boston. My colleague, Rep. Santiago, has dropped out of the Boston mayor's race, so we're down to five. But I mean, the September date is rapidly coming up on all the preliminaries. And I know in the city, I think there's still time left for people to take papers out and return. So we don't even know if there's going to be a preliminary in Quincy yet. No, that's not true. No, is what two papers are all in?
They have until July 27th to take papers out. So we don't know.
So, yeah. So, I mean, obviously the clerks are very concerned because I think there may be a preliminary in Ward 2, I think.
Yes, there's three candidates declared right now.
So the clerks are obviously very eager for us because they got to get moving on getting that material in print. And the question, who pays for us, us or them? And last year's elections were state federal elections. So the state picked up, you know, that cost, but if we do the mail-in at home, mail-in ballots at home again, then, you know, should the city pick up those costs?
Right.
But I mean, it seems like the clerks are very interested in wanting to continue mail-in ballots.
Oh yeah, it seems to be, especially here in Quincy, very popular. And, you know, they devised a system where they worked with the post office to get the ballots for Quincy out of the general circulation. That way they could process them much more quickly.
And the city has COVID money. So $46 million in COVID money plus a potential $16 million in county COVID money.
Right.
That's going to be dedicated to Quincy. So I'm thinking, you know, they could figure something out.
They could afford it, yeah.
At least this year they can figure something
out. Yeah. We haven't even talked about the whole redistricting issue. That's for next week, Taggy.
We can talk about that next week.
Yeah.
Not quite sure what the technical correction was in the Senate made to the House bill. I'm still not entirely clear what happened there. Okay. It's a little bit too technical. I got to sort that out.
All right. In the meantime, reach out to you, of course.
Yep. 617-722-2014. 617-722-2014. Hit a button. Leave a voice for any staffer. You know, you obviously have tacky.chan at mahouse.gov, tacky.chan at mahouse.gov. I am getting a lot of testimony these days, so it does take me quite a bit of time to sort through my email now because I'm averaging about 400 at this point plus a day because I'm kind of like sorting through these things, as well as obviously the Facebook page I announced earlier regarding watching me on site, but also put some useful information up there. You can see my comings and goings as State Representative Tacky Chan. And we also have a Twitter account, you know, at Tacky Chan, which we put some information in, tackychan.org, which is the website that we use in the office for posting human service numbers, city numbers, you know, phone numbers you can call folks before you call me. So obviously you can also just do a search engine, not even my site, to find out what you need. But, you know, obviously, please be patient with us. We continue working well, but as you can tell, I do receive a ridiculous volume of emails a day, which just seems like what people want to do. But hopefully we will have a transition plan I can talk about soon, and, you know, eager to see people visit us again.
Sounds good. Meantime, we will check in next week.
We'll see you next week.
Okay. Thanks, Tacky.
Take care.